You're listening to The Wicked Horror Show, powered by the Dorkening Podcast Network. For more information, check out thedorkening.com.
Deadly Grounds Coffee knows how important your coffee is to you. Every batch is roasted to perfection with a unique special method that brings out the richest, deepest, smoothest flavor you'll ever find. We're coffee freaks too, and deadly serious about our brew. Just one sip and you'll know why we say, once you go deadly, you don't go back. It's truly coffee to die for. So when you're ready to get a little deadly, get online and order yours at getdeadly.com. It's coffee so good, it's scary.
There we are. We are now live on an awesome episode of the Wicked Horror Show. I want to remind everybody that every single show is brought to you by Deadly Grounds Coffee. Head on over to getdeadly.com to get the most amazing coffee you'll ever drink. And yeah, with that, we have Wolfie.
Oh, everybody.
Yo, yo.
Hey, everybody.
Tony.
What is going on, people?
And our very, very awesome special guest of the evening, Brad and Josephina Sykes. How's it going this evening?
Hi, thanks for having us. Yeah.
Well, thank you for joining us. And, you know, you guys are joining us for a very special reason. It's the 10th anniversary of Plaguers.
Yes, it is. Yeah. Can't believe it.
We're 10 years younger.
Right.
I'm going to kick it over to Wolfie. Why don't you kick us off?
All right. Yeah, like Leo stated, it's the 10th anniversary of Plaguers. Did you think that the movie was going to, I mean, there's movies that you make that you love. Did you think that this would be like, there'd be like a re-release 10 years later for this?
I surely didn't think of that when, you know, when it first came out. I didn't think it would be bound for this, you know, type of release. But, you know, I think that more time has gone by, you know, and the more people I've heard from who have told me they enjoyed the movie, even if they had a bit harder time finding it in some cases, it made us feel like we ought to get it out there again. Now, we weren't really making plans for that, concrete plans. We were making other movies. And the distributor, it just turned out that the distributor that we've been working with for the past few years, Wild Eye Releasing, they were interested in doing this. They, you know, Rob, who's in charge of the company, he basically expressed interest in doing this release for Plaguers. And so this just seemed really right to us because
we got our rights back.
We had the rights back. As Josephine pointed out, this would be the 10th anniversary if we can get it out this year.
It would be nice.
We were talking about, just to put it in context, we were talking about this about a year ago now. I mean, like basically in probably November, December of last year, we were talking to Rob about doing this release because I remember we were sending the elements to him like at the end of the year before the holidays, you know, trying to hope our stuff wouldn't get like lost in the mail or something. And also when he proposed it, we really felt like it was a good idea to do it with him because Wild Eye, they're one of the few companies I think that really understands horror films and indie horror. And they are fans of these movies. They're not just selling them and making the money or whatever. They actually really love these type of films. And we felt like it would be in good hands with them.
And when you make a movie, you just never know what's going to happen. Just because you make it and it gets out there, it's released, that doesn't mean you're done with it. You know, that's
Never done with any film.
You're never done. They're going to be all the movies you make, they're going to be your kids forever. You have to keep taking care of them. So you just never know. But it's frankly, a nice surprise.
But this is one that I was proud of it. I mean, Josephine and I are both proud of it when we made it back then. And when it, you know, we got some good response at festivals and it was released in basically every country in the world. So it was a pretty successful movie by a lot of people's yardstick. But I felt like it was not really that well released in terms of the initial DVD release. So this is just a chance to kind of right some of the, I don't say wrongs, but some of the things that weren't done as well back then.
Also, it's great to have it on a Blu-ray for the first time. Mm-hmm. And also to bring it to the attention of, you know, younger generations of fans. And also people who maybe they missed it for the first time, but now they won't, hopefully. And also they probably get the movie more nowadays than some people did back when it was first released.
Yeah, the timing is definitely better now than it was in 2009. Because one of the things I remember in 2009 was Avatar was coming out, you know, or it had just come out, and it was what was going on then. It was these big CGI spectacles, or on a lower budget level, let's say Sci-Fi Channel CGI spectacles.
Right.
And the practical effects and all the stuff we have in Plaguers just wasn't really, it was kind of lost in the mix. It wasn't really appreciated. And our distributor was trying to emulate these bigger films. They were trying to position it as like an Avatar type movie or something along those lines. And, you know, if you rent Plaguers and you think you're going to get Avatar, you're going to be very disappointed. So they literally went away from Image Entertainment, literally went away from the fans that would actually embrace the movie and tried to push it to an audience that's more like a real mainstream sci-fi audience who were not as enchanted with it as like fans would be who actually like practical effects, gore, creature suits, and they get their 80s references. Now all that stuff, people are missing that stuff and they're embracing that stuff. And so I think the timing is better now. Maybe it's just as well. I mean,
are more prepared nowadays to embrace the retro elements of the movie than
absolutely
they were back.
Absolutely. So I'm just glad we've had the opportunity to do this. I don't take it for granted that we've been able to get the movie out there again in a significant way, you know, and get a second chance to make an impression on people, you know.
Yeah, the nice thing is, and I speak for Tony and the rest of the guys, we're all practical effects fans.
I was literally about to say something about that. So when is practical effects ever retro?
Yeah.
They shouldn't be.
They shouldn't be. But, you know, I've seen it happen because
it bothers us when we watch a horror movie and you see CG blood. It's like, why? Blood is so cheap. Why can't you just, you know, do that? You know? We could never do that, but, you know. How things moved more into CG nowadays,
everything
unfortunately.
Did. Everything moved in the in
not
the
just effects, also production design,
everything.
Art design,
everything.
And so on.
Virtual sets and all this kind of stuff. And you know, it just, I mean, when I started out, I actually worked in the effects industry, and I worked on, like, if you're familiar with Brian Yuzna, who produced Reanimator and directed some movies. I worked on some of the films he directed, and you know, there were so many effects companies working on those movies back then that they needed a coordinator to corral all of them. And I was working with the coordinator. I was an assistant coordinator. So like we would have like shops building, you know, alien puppets, and, you know, somebody else would be handling gore effects, and somebody else would be doing a chair. There was like a giant alien chair that came to life. You know, everybody was all these different companies, different houses working on these things. That was in the late 90s. And that's how I won some of the jobs I got when I first started out. And so I gained a real appreciation for this stuff and made a lot of friends. And some of those guys ended up working on our films, including Plaguers. And so I have such a tremendous respect for that. And that's what the movies I love, that's what they have in them too, you know, the older movies that I grew up with. So we want to keep that tradition going. We always have. We're not doing it because it's cool. We're doing it because that's what we like to do. And we've always done. And you can
look
at my filmography and you'll see it.
Yeah.
It's all, everything I've done has been like that. So, you know.
It's kind of cool when you look back on stuff like that, because, you know, you're talking about like the late 70s all the way through the 80s to the 90s, where, you know, a horror film would be getting made. Someone's like, okay, I have an idea for a gag, but I'm not quite sure how to do it. And they talk to like the Tom Savinis or the Greg Nicotero's at the time and whatever,
right.
You know.
Right.
And they go, oh, I know. We'll take a balloon, we'll fill it with blood, we'll hook it up to a mouse trap, and it'll just
out.
And they'd come up with this really weird gimmick to get that. Now they're just kind of like, okay, well, we'll just draw it.
Yeah, I knew we were in trouble. I knew we were in trouble when, you know, George Romero is like probably my all-time favorite director, or one of my favorite directors. And I remember, I think he was doing one of his last zombie films. I can't remember which one. It might have been Diary of the Dead. And I remember reading an interview with him where he said, we're doing all CG blood on this. It just takes too long to clean it up. And I'm thinking, oh man, like if Romero's saying that, we're in trouble, you know, because you don't get much more like, you know, classic physical effects, practical effects than George Romero. So, and that was years ago. And then it's just gotten worse since then. And look, people are still doing practical stuff. I'm not saying there aren't other people doing this stuff. In fact, if anything, it might have pushed lately. I think it's pushed some people
to do
this stuff.
To try to do practical, yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. So I'm very
Adam Green stuff.
What's that?
Adam Green, if you've seen like the Hatchet movies.
Oh yeah, no, that's absolutely, absolutely. That's one of the reasons why those films are so popular. I think especially with the first one was just coming out and seeing like Kane Hodder out there and John Buechler doing doing all those gags, and you know, everything was real. Everything was, you know, no CG blood in that one. You know, go to the woods. You can spray blood everywhere. You don't have to worry about
it. Yeah, exactly. So along with it being a new release, we're also getting new content. on Plaguers.
Oh yeah, yeah, we are. Yeah. We did do a few extra new features for this Blu-ray. We did a new commentary. We have the original commentary track that we did, Josephine and I did with Steve Rails back in 2009. We also have a new commentary that we did. It's kind of interesting, you know, it's like, I would call it a retrospective commentary in a way, with Josephine, I, and our editor, Brad Jakes, who we're actually still working with him on a current project. We also had a screening in 2012 of the movie at like a local indie theater that had a lot of cast and crew come out for that. And we did a big Q&A after the screening. Well, that was put on tape and that's on the disc as well. There's like a half hour Q&A. So that's kind of cool. That was, once again, that was something we did back then to keep the movie alive. You know, we always felt like, oh, this movie needs to reach more people. So we did that screening. We had a Q&A and that's on there, along with all the same features from the original editions. Sometimes those get lost because certain people own certain features and you don't get that extra.
Because we own them. They're there.
Yeah, they're there. They're there. And then the movie's just it's a big upgrade in terms of the look and the sound and everything. And it was, I mean, for me, and I've watched this movie enough times. I was impressed with some of the sound mix. I feel like the Dolby mix really came through because we actually mixed it at a Dolby stage. It came through stronger on this Blu-ray than any previous release. Mm-hmm. So, and I think the movie looks better too. But that was something that jumped out at me. Like when we were QCing it, I was like, man, you know, you hear every little sound effect, because we spent about a year working on the sound for this movie, building the soundtrack. So it's a very layered soundtrack, and you get to hear all those left and right channel effects that we built into it. You know.
So. Well, just going into the comments here. I just lost it here. Angela wants to say congratulations on the 10th anniversary. And so for fans in the chat room, like Sergio asking about Plaguers, some people that may be new to the movie, why don't you give a brief synopsis of the movie and then we'll play the trailer.
Brief synopsis would be basically there's a crew of a ship that's headed back to Earth. It's a transport vessel heading back to Earth with this alien energy source. They don't know what it is, but it's powering the ship, so it's powerful. And they end up having an unexpected stop. They take some new people on board, some new passengers on board, who turn out to not be who you think they are. And then the energy source gets disrupted and all hell breaks loose. So that's my brief synopsis without giving away the whole film. Hopefully that will attract you to watch it.
Awesome. Here we go. Here's the trailer.
This is the UFO, Diana. Help. Please help.
Electrical unit's trashed. Looks like somebody ripped it out.
What the hell was that?
We got a problem.
Some kind of alien energy source. Whatever that thing is, I want it off the ship.
Stay behind me. Try to save as much ammo as you can.
The controls are locked. It's like something's taking over.
It's a mixture of like the effects and the performance and the character. I think it's just great. So yeah, I was trying for that anyway. So I'm glad that came through for you.
Actually, we just had Steel from Day to Dead on a couple weeks ago.
Gary Clark.
Oh, okay. Yeah, yeah. Right. I saw that. I was looking into your page and I saw that. Yeah, he's great in that too. He's terrific.
Oh, totally.
I actually spoke to Joe Pilato like early in my career, like the second movie I directed, this movie called Evil Sister 2. The producer knew him through a manner of speaking, and I spoke to him a couple of times, gave him the script. He was interested in doing it, and ultimately he couldn't do it. I think it was more like a union thing or something. He didn't want to script his union affiliation because he's doing a lot of voiceover work. But boy, was that cool. Just to talk to Joe on the phone a few times and imagine Joe Pilato playing that part. I still, like, he passed away, I think it was last year. It was last year, I think. And I was like, you know, I just started thinking about all that time period and how cool it would have been to have worked with him. And he's just a terrific actor, underappreciated, really, not in nearly enough movies. I mean, you know, he should have been in more stuff.
We are back. That was the trailer for Plaguers, which is the 10th anniversary. It's out right now, the special edition.
Here it is. Yeah, here it is, right in front of here. Try to get the glare off of that. Here's the Blu-ray and the DVD.
So out on physical media and VOD as well. And it's awesome that you did a re-release in physical media as well.
Long live physical media. I gotta say that.
Tony and I and Kevin, who's not with us tonight, we all feel the same way.
Yes,
we have that crazy collection that Tony has behind him.
Well, you guys are seeing the camera from one angle with us, but if you turned it around, you'd see my crazy collection
or
too.
Part of it,
or at least part of it. So you know,
yeah, I know all about it, man.
it's just a nostalgic feeling of going in there like a video store, being able to pick it up, hold it, and you know, like look at pictures. I mean, you can go on Netflix and stuff and look at pictures, but it doesn't have that same feeling.
Absolutely. I mean, as a fan, that I feel that as a fan, and also like as an artist, it's, you know, I would liken it to like a, you know, I mean, if you've been doing this long enough, you know, I can remember the thrill, like, you know, Wolfie and I were talking about Camp Blood earlier, and I can remember the thrill when Camp Blood 2 came out, not the first one, but the second one. That was my first movie in a chain. Like, it was in Hollywood Video. If you guys remember Hollywood Video.
Yep.
And that chain was out there just as big as Blockbuster, close to it. And I remember going in the store and seeing my movie on the new release wall. And that's like one of those things you just can never, you know, duplicate that. I mean, that's just like the coolest thing in the world, to see your tape on the shelf and next to all the other new release horror flicks and whatever other flicks are there, you know what I mean? And it's meaningful to me as a collector. And it's also meaningful to me as a filmmaker, because I thought that's your final statement. Like, that's the final product that you've spent all these years on. This is the, you know, this is the result.
It exists somehow.
It exists. It has to be. And Wild Eye is really big on that. That's the reason why we got in business with Wild Eye in the first place, is they do not just DVD and Blu-rays, they do even VHS of some movies.
They do.
Like our first film we did with Wild Eye is called High Eight, which is kind of means horror independent eight. And that, one of the reasons we went with Rob and Wild Eye is we're like, who still does VHS? Who still releases new VHS? And I'd seen Wild Eye's VHS in the stores in Amoeba Music out here in LA. And I'm like, they do VHS. And that was part of our deal. And they did. And actually the VHS, I think, has in some ways been more popular, a bigger seller on that movie than the DVD, you know, because it's just...
Yeah, there's tons of collectors out there that just want to eat all that stuff up. They're like, oh my God, what did I have VHS?
And it's appropriate to the film. I think it's sometimes it depends on the film too. You know, you can't just slap any movie on tape and expect people to jump on it. But I think if you got the right type of movie with certain filmmakers or a certain aesthetic, I think that people are interested in that. Certain collectors will definitely be interested in that. And I still collect VHS myself. I mean, I have a lot of movies on tape because that are not on DVD and not on Blue and may never be. So anyway, it's...
Especially with like new movies. I mean, I guess if they're made right, you look at like some of the 80s movies, you don't get the same feeling. Sometimes, you know, you're on VHS to kind of hid some of the stuff. You get it.
Oh, yeah.
You get it too enhanced and you're just like, okay, you lost the feeling of what it was back then.
Oh, yeah. I have friends who feel that way. I feel like these upgrades are almost like, you know, taking away from the, they almost look too good. Sometimes.
Some movies do look too clean. That's
almost
the thing,
like, don't clean it up too much. that 2K scan or whatever, it's going to reveal all kinds of defects that, you know, the original creators didn't anticipate when it was projected, let's say, somewhere, or it was on VHS, and you know, so yeah, that can happen for sure. That doesn't stop me from buying the Blu-ray, but I agree with you 100%.
Being a VHS collector, what's the, you know, and I'm pretty sure it's probably most of it's horror, but being a VHS collector, what's that one movie in your collection you would like to see make the jump to DVD or Blu-ray?
I'll just name one, like the first one that come off the top of my head, is The Keep, that Michael Mann movie, The Keep, because I love that film. I've always been a fan of it, and it's never made the jump past like tape and Laserdisc. So there's no legitimate U.S. release for that movie on DVD or Blue. And from what I've read and heard, there will never be one. Based on music rights, and also because Michael Mann himself, I guess, doesn't want it released. He's embarrassed by it or something like that. But I just love that film, and I would love to have a better quality of ideally a Blu-ray, really, at this point. It's a beautifully photographed movie. It's got a great soundtrack by Tangerine Dream. But there are so many, there are many, there's a lot of films I could think of. Not just horror films either. I mean, there's a lot of good dramas and thrillers and all kinds of weird stuff out there. But The Keep is one that comes to mind. And, you know, but some of it seems like every year there'll be a couple of films like that end up coming out, like on Blue. Like someone will wrangle the rights and they'll get it out there. So I don't give up hope.
There's a few companies out there that are putting out like obscure, like Kino Lobir puts out
they're great. Kino, Vinegar Syndrome,
Severn. Severn looks like it's putting out a lot of, like, you know, it used to be just horror, but it looks like they're putting, you know, like some kids movies out. I know they just put out the Peanut Butter Solution.
Oh yeah, that's been like a VHS only title for a long time. Yeah, yep.
So there's companies out there that are putting out the, you know, not mainstream titles, but the more like even obscure one. I'm like, I've never even heard of this movie. Like, but there are companies that are doing it.
Yeah.
The one movie I would love to have from my early 80s as a teenager that only made it to VHS. It never made it to DVD. That's Blood Beach.
Oh, I've got a copy of that too. It's right on my shelf right next to The Keep. Yeah. I mean, serious. It's like the media release, like the VHS, the girl on the sand.
Coming out of the sand. Yeah.
I've got a copy of that. Yep.
I remember seeing it at the drive-in when it came out. I think I was like 14 when it came out and saw it at the drive-in. I just fell in love with that movie, and it's never made it
And once again, I couldn't tell. Like, that's one where I'm like, why not? You know, like, who's got the rights to that? You know, I don't know. It's just some of these rights issues just hold these things up. So.
I know that it was released in Germany.
Yeah, I'll bet.
Yes, Leo.
And in the chat room, Carlo Barbieri III says, I had that. And actually, a bunch of comments. He said he used to have over 13,000 in his first collection, had to sell it. Now his second collection is around 5,000 to 6,000. He also teaches film educational work, and he loves VHS. That was his first collection. Angela still has the Laserdisc, and sadly, at the moment, my new one is mainly OOP DVDs and Blu-rays.
Out of print.
Yep. There we go.
For the people who don't know, OOP is out of print.
Right.
There we go.
Now, with the practical effects, I must say, when I watched it, I did not see Pleggers when it first came out. Uh-huh. So after watching it and seeing all the practical effects that were used, it was like a breath of fresh air, too. Because I'm sitting there, I'm watching, I'm like, how's this going to go? Because at that point, when I looked on the IMDb, it said like sci-fi and all this stuff. I've told the guys, and they know, sci-fi is probably like, on the bottom shelf of my, you know, but to tell you the truth, as I'm watching it, I'm like, this seems more of just like if you slap like horror movie with a little bit of sci-fi in it, mm-hmm. I would, you know, that's what it feels like. Because the gore in that movie, I was just like, I was very, very impressed. And, you know, the it had, you know, a sci-fi-ish feel to it. But I think in my eyes, the horror and the gore jumped over that. I'm like,
yeah,
I guess in my mind, it was a breath of fresh air because, you know, I'll watch sci-fi movies, but it's definitely not like my cup of tea.
I'll be honest. I'm not a big fan of sci-fi like on its own. Like I want it to be paired up with horror, at least like to some degree. Like it's got to be like, let's say like The Thing or The Fly or Life Force or some, or even these Corman films like Galaxy of Terror or something like that. And I always consider Plaguers like a horror movie that just happens to be set in space. That's how I always looked at it. I feel like it definitely favored the horror over the sci-fi. I knew that would annoy some people, but I didn't really care because, you know, I really wanted to deliver as a horror film first and foremost. I wanted it to be a fun ride and I wanted to favor the horror side of it. And I hadn't seen anything like that in a long time. Like we're talking about 80s movies here, but I hadn't seen anything made recently like that. Like I say, the one I thought of back then was The Event Horizon. That was one of the last times I'd seen a movie like that. And so I just felt like, let's do this. You know, let's make our own, you know, kind of an homage to these movies, but also bring some new things to it that you haven't seen before, you know. But yeah, like we're talking about demons here and we're talking about all this kind of stuff. And those were more the references, more the influences on the movie than just like, say, 2001 or, you know, Close Encounters or whatever. Even other sci-fi movies, like they're cool, like Outland or, you know, things like from the 70s, even Alien. I mean, Alien, I love Alien, but Demons is a bigger influence on Plagueis than Aliens.
Let's put it that way. When we're giving references to cast and crew, Brad would tell
production designer to watch
Event Horizon and the cast watch Demons.
So yeah, yeah.
We don't know watch if Demons. Everybody in the cast watch Demons.
Well, this guy's crazy. You know, you watch this badly dubbed movie with, you know, Iron Maiden and the soundtrack, whatever. Yeah, damn right you're going to watch that. That's, you know, that's if you don't get you, we got to get on the same page here, you know.
You got a real crazy looking mask that infects somebody and that they pass it on. I mean, how cool is that for an idea?
I love that. See, we didn't go that far, you know. We but there were people like, we had our world premiere for Plagueis was in Spain, of all places. And actually, Wolfie, you'll appreciate this. It was a film festival that was basically presided over by Paul Naschy. And one of the awards they would give out was called the Waldemar Daninsky Awards. So if you know his, you know, werewolf films, that's his character. So I'm like, we're going to a film festival, you know, and Paul Naschy's the figurehead of the festival. So that was our premiere. And there were people that came up to me, Spanish fans who came up to me after the screening and said, you must be a fan of Demons. You must be a fan of Night of the Creeps. And they're like, started humming the theme to Plagueis, because that was the Demons theme from Claudio Simonetti did. That was like a reference I give my composer. I said, which I didn't need to give him anyway, because he loves this stuff. And that was what we wanted to do, was something that was like kind of a catchy theme. That's also something that's missing from horror.
And all movies, really.
But it's definitely missing from horror. So I was like, yeah, let's do like a catchy kind of almost like disco beat, kind of like, you know, with the voices and all that kind of stuff that Goblin was doing so well back then and Simonetti was doing so well. So we just wanted to bring all that into sci-fi, because I felt
have
like...
Have fun with it.
Yeah, exactly.
Don't take this movie
sci-fi
seriously.
Sci-fi can be too sterile sometimes. Right. And this is not sterile. There's blood everywhere. So.
So did you get to meet Naschy?
I did. Yeah, we both did. Yeah. He doesn't speak a lot of English, but I did tell him that the Blue Eyes of the Broken Doll, which is House of Psychotic Women, is my favorite film of his. And I also got him to sign a poster I actually took with me to Spain. It was like a day bill for The Hanging Woman. Oh. And I got, which has had a different title on the day bill, but I won't get into that. But anyway, he signed it. It was a very nice man.
Real gentleman.
And then he passed away the next year. Like, literally, he did one more edition of the festival. This was in September 2008 when we met him. They did an edition the next year, and then he passed away in like November of that year. So you never know with people. And it was a real lucky chance to meet him and tell him that we enjoyed his work. And he really appreciated that, because, you know, guys like that don't get, you know how it is. They don't get really the approbation that they ought to get, or the appreciation sometimes, you know, for their work. So anyway, it was a great experience. And the movie got a great response, a full crowd.
It was the first time. It's like, for us, you know, you get so tired of your own movie after, you know, being with it for years, shepherding, working on it. And you're like, I can't watch it anymore. You know, I'm so sick of it. And in the same time, you know, going to Spain and watching the movie with it was like a convention hall full of people. And that was a treat. It's one of these moments that everything, like, you go through to make a movie, all the challenges and hardships, it's like it's worth it, because you have all these people around who enjoy it and they react. They have their own reactions, and it's fun and it's rewarding. And you're like, okay, now I get it. That's why I've been
going
through.
And they're just there to have fun. Like, they don't know you. There's no connection there. There's nothing. Nobody's, you know, it's an impartial audience. It's just people just want to see a good movie. They just want to have fun. And so they're going to judge it based on that. They don't care. They don't, you know, there's nothing going on. Like in LA, when you screen something and you kind of, you know, you don't know what the reaction is going to be. And it's usually something loaded and whatever. This was just like a pure normal audience reaction, and people were really enjoying it. And like Josephine said, it did make it all worthwhile. And we ended up winning best screenplay at the awards ceremony at the end. So it was just such a cool experience to get to go to Spain.
On many levels.
On many levels.
And have a nice premiere there. And then, you know, we did more festivals in the US. And that's also nice to see people here reacting to the movie. And for us as filmmakers, that's the best, because you don't make the movie just for yourself. Like I said, by that point, you're tired of it, going through all these QCs and steps and so on, and doing the business side of it and all that. But for us, the audience's reaction, it's like the best treat. And that's why now, you know, getting almost daily, you know, Facebook messages and emails with different people, different fans from all over US picking up their copy in Walmart it's also very rewarding because it's, you know, we feel supported and you feel like you're not doing this just, you know, for nothing. It's in a vacuum. It's people out there, they watch the movie and they enjoy it. And that's the best feeling.
Yeah.
I think it's great. I mean, it's just, it's nice to hear that people are accepting it as much as that, as well as that you want them to. And you guys are, I look at Brad's IMDb and you guys are like busy. How many movies have you made since day one, Brad?
I don't
even remember.
I'm just going to say something like 25 or something like that. I mean, like, because I had some years where I was directing like 4 movies a year, which was getting actually a bit tiresome. It was wearying, you know, because I actually really try to do the very best I can every time out and take each project very seriously. And I don't want to blow through any project. And there were some years where it was just demanding. You know, that was very demanding because these are low budget films, obviously, and with certain personalities involved sometimes, and schedules, the fast schedules too, because sometimes you'd make a film like I did this movie called Death Factory, and which was a tough shoot anyway, because we were shooting in an abandoned or kind of an empty haunted attraction in the summer, in the dead of summer, which had almost no electricity or running water. But the movie had to be released within a few months. You know, the distributor was basically like, you're shooting this movie in the summer and we've already got a release date for it, November 5th, you know, whatever that was, 2002. And you're going, okay, you know, I mean, it, no pressure, right? And so those type of things are, you know, it can get exhausting. But yeah, I've written most of the movies I've directed, and some I haven't, but most of them I write too and come up with the idea. And like Josephine and I have done like what, 5 movies together, like since we started, like
yeah,
five or six movies, you know, together through our company. Once we started working together with Nightfall Pictures, we that's how we've been doing things. But Plaguers was like our biggest film up to that point. Mm-hmm. So it was a challenge, but you know,
you have to embrace it.
We had fun, actually. Most of the time, I think, on that movie, we had fun.
Yeah, it was a
especially
fun shoot.
The shoot itself mm-hmm. was fun, which could have been difficult with all the stuff.
Yeah, I mean, I was, you know, concerned because all the actors were going to do their own stunts, and I was hoping nobody's going to get hurt in the process, and they're going to wear makeup, different stages, and also contact lenses. And some of the actors, the contact lenses that us and, you know, the effects keys we picked are really cool, but they couldn't see through them. So once again, they're kind of blindingly having to fight or to walk or to, you know, anything. So I was just thrilled that nobody got hurt.
Yeah. Yeah. It was a lot. It was a tall order. We didn't have the budget for stuntmen, you know.
We had a stunt coordinator, but that's about it. But we didn't have like a stunt person per actor. They had to actually do their own stunt, so that's always nerve-wracking. And they did some rehearsals, and you know, we did some training before, especially for the fighting scenes between Kyra and Holloway. But we did like a lot of rehearsals, even like Brad and the fighting coordinator. They went
to a boxing gym. Yeah, I went to a boxing gym for that. Which is tough because, you know, you're rehearsing it in a boxing ring, but then when you get on set, you're really in a different space. I mean, it's a similar space, but it's a, you know, more of an elongated tube that you're shooting in versus square. So, you know, you just do as much prep as you can, you know, it never hurts to do prep. And the movie like this is all about prep. I mean, that's actually one of the good things, like in a way, is that we originally wanted to shoot in the summer of 2006, and it got delayed because
the stages weren't available.
They weren't available. So we had to push it to the fall, but we just used that time for more prep. You know, that was our solution to that, which I think ended up, frankly, probably used all that time.
It was
time
a blessing in disguise.
We needed it. We needed it.
It was annoying as it was in the beginning then, but then it gave us more prep because we had to build extra sets and create the costumes for everybody, especially for the pirate girls.
Stages on this movie, to talk a little bit about how it started out, I had the concept and the idea for the thing and the treatment, but you know, there's obviously a certain price tag associated with making a movie like this versus say a slasher film in the woods. And I found out about these stages through another producer who was trying to do something there. And he brought me over there, and that project didn't happen. But I was like, well, this could be the place for Plaguers, you know, but we had to build onto that. And so we probably built probably 30% of what you see in the movie is new stuff that our production designer and his crew built to integrate with the existing sets that were already there. So there's a lot. It was like this movie was very, in a way, very logistical and kind of like solving a puzzle. And there were also a lot of things that you couldn't be as freewheeling as you could with, say, like a regular location shoot where you can do handheld and you can move the camera around. And, this was more like, well, there's going to be green screen over here. You can't just go all over the place.
The sets are,
or you're
going to
see off the set. Yeah. Or you're going to see a crew member standing on the set. A guy with a coffee cup, you know. So it was a little more logistical and precise. You had to be a bit more precise, I think, sometimes in this than you would on a location shoot.
Did you work with any of the actors beforehand in any of your other movies, or was it all brand new casting? And
you know, what's funny is the only actor in Plaguers that we worked with before was Dave Johnson, who's the corpse. He's the dead guy in the coffin who then becomes a creature at the end. And this creature right here, yeah, you see on the shirt. He was in our previous movie, Mutation. And I told Dave, I said, whatever we do next, we're going to put you in it. And I didn't say what role we're going to give you. I just said, you're going to be in it. So he ended up playing that part, and he had to put that creature suit on at the end, which was, Josephine was saying, you couldn't see out of the eyes and you could barely hear me. So directing that was a challenge, and it was even more challenging for him, I'm sure. But all the other actors were new. We partly because we had certain kinds of parts we were casting for, and partly I think some investors had an influence over the casting.
New people.
They wanted new people. They didn't necessarily want, it was kind of in the middle. But no, they were all new. They're all pretty much new to me. Some of them have been in other horror films before, but they were all pretty new to us. You know, we're trying to get people with makeup. Everybody will say they have experience with this, but you know, we're trying to get people that have experience with makeup effects and stuff like that. But no matter what, I think none of them had dealt with anything like we had in this. I mean, they were just, you know, sometimes they were just completely covered almost from head to toe with makeup and you know, contacts and everything. So it was tubing running up and down for, you know, when you have gore shooting out and things like that. So it was just...
It wasn't easy, but, you know.
And we shot the movie completely out of sequence, completely. So there were some actors where they would start, literally their first day of work was in full Plaguer makeup. And there was one girl that she was in that full Plaguer makeup, and she realized that she was allergic to the contacts.
Oh, no.
The contact lenses. So her eyes got super swelly, swell up and puffy and red. And basically I kind of had to, you know, we had to work something out where she would not be wearing contacts for the rest of the film, because, you know, I said, you just have to give me a 50% more Plaguer or something like that. Just, you know, be more fierce, I guess, because we're not going
to make up for the lack of contacts.
Yeah. And she was actually awesome to work with. Stephanie Skews. She was really great to work with. And she's, you'll see her in the featurette. She's all over it, because we're still in touch with her. And, you know,
she wanted to have her Q&A. To come to do the commentary with us. She just got sick that day, but
But anyway, it was a challenge for all the actors, because as I told everybody, I remember telling everybody this when I think even in the auditions, I said, you're really going to be playing two roles in this movie. You're going to play yourself as a human, and then you're going to play yourself as a Plaguer, as a creature. So, you know, you tell people things and they might assimilate that or not. But the ones who got cast, they all definitely got an idea of what it were I was talking about when I said that. So, yeah, but it was like playing two roles. For all the cast, really, except for Railsback, you know. I mean, he was, you know, pretty much himself throughout, except when he gets his arm ripped off.
What you got, Leo?
We got about a little less than 15 minutes left, so I just wanted to make sure that we did another run of the trailer, and we're talking about Plaguers, which its 10th anniversary is now, and there's a special release, which you can find out more information down below or up above, depending on where you're watching or listening to us. But here we go. Here's a trailer for Plaguers.
Help! Please help!
Electrical unit's trashed. Looks like somebody ripped it out.
What the hell was that?
We got a problem.
Some kind of alien energy source. Whatever that thing is, I want it off the ship.
Stay behind me. Try to save as much ammo as you can.
The controls are locked. It's like something's taking over.
rise and shine, my sinners. When Father Evil starts his day, he gets a little deadly. Deadly Grounds coffee has the richest, smoothest flavor you'll find anywhere. It's sinfully delicious. Once you go deadly, you never go back. Order yours at GetDeadly.com. Coffee's so good, it's scary.
Trying to, like Voodoo, they'll have like some of the special features added with the streaming. Not as much, but it, I think they still do have some like the special features if you purchased a movie. Actually, they didn't have it before. That was one of the reasons why
I went. Things are always changing. There are always new things going on, especially with streaming. Everybody's trying to keep up with it. You know, as filmmakers and distributors are trying to keep up with it.
Actually, all the Disney, a lot of the Disney Plus items have tons of special features with them.
Yeah, because I know in the beginning when it was all just streaming, a lot of people were like, well, they don't, all they have is the movie. So a lot of the people that were, you know, physical media,
right,
you know, they're like, well, if I'm going to do this streaming, I want some of the behind the scenes and the commentaries and stuff.
Right.
And I guess a lot of the companies, they're like, okay, well, we kind of need this.
Because
I know a lot of people that went from physical to digital. It's just because of space, you know. Out of space every 5 seconds.
I understand I understand that. That's there. You got to put limitations on. It's hard to, but you know.
It's really hard.
Yeah. Well, we wanted to make sure we talked about your upcoming projects, but I just wanted to ask one thing. You know, I got a little bit of a Doctor Who vibe. Was I just like? Pushing that onto it, or was it, did anybody else get like a Doctor Who vibe on it? It
wasn't intentional. I'm aware, I know what that show is. I know there's like a bunch of different versions of it too, but I never watched it. I mean, I never watched it. I wasn't trying to reference that. I reference a bunch of other things, but not that one.
I think it's the second or third time Leo said something like this, where he's like, I got this kind of vibe off of this, and we're all like, no.
It's just me.
I can't say that there isn't, just because I never watched Doctor Who, so there could be.
I didn't really get one.
No.
My memories of that show were literally like, I would see clips from it when I was a kid. That it was like the shot on video version of it, probably like early British, or like Tom Baker was the guy in it.
The guy in the floppy hat. Whatever.
And I would see like clips of it and just be like, no. But then I'd change the channel to like, you know, Ray Bradbury Theater, or, you know, Tales from the Dark Side, or, you know, something like that. But I was going to show you guys this, actually. We're talking about the practical effects and everything. This is one of the ships in the movie.
That's the one they dock into, right?
Yeah, this is the Diana. The girls, the girls are on. It's this gives you an idea how big the thing really is. I kept this for years after. It's one of the few things I have left from the movie, actually. We have a few costumes and stuff, but it's actually, you can see the two sections here.
You broke it.
One of these days, I'm going to put this thing on a rod. And, just, you know, get it mounted somewhere, put it up on a shelf. But I would kept that. The other ship was like, in real life, was like this. I mean, it was gigantic, made of wood, and it was just, I couldn't, it was falling apart. We tried to keep it around, but it was falling apart. Oh, but all those scenes were shot on a green screen in like one day. We just did one day of green screen photography, just miniatures, back and forth, miniature stuff for like 12 hours.
That's like when you see like how they made the original Star Wars, you know,
the rotoscoping.
The Death Star. You know, the Death Star took up like a 20-foot room.
Miniatures have to be built actually very large to achieve the detail that you need to make them believable on screen. You know, whether it's Star Wars or Alien or any of these, you know, old school things with the miniatures. Yeah, they really need that level of detail. It's really cool to see that stuff. I mean, I felt lucky that we, actually the guy who built these miniatures, Pat Denver, worked on Titanic and Terminator 2. He's a major model maker that was brought on just to do that work. And he's Bob Denver's son, too, if you know Gilligan's Island.
Yep.
Kind of a fun little trivia thing. Kind of looks like him, too. but that kind of stuff, and it's funny how they don't, you know, to me, it was, I was learning some things, too, because, you know, these things don't move. I mean, they just sit still, and it's all about moving the camera past it, toward, I mean, if you move it toward it, it almost, in the final product, it's going to look like it's going away from you. I mean, it's almost like the opposite of what you think, you know,
right.
If you move the camera backward, it looks like it's going forward, that type of thing. So that was one of those cases where we could not get around CGI. We could not get around visual effects because we couldn't do, like you mentioned, Star Wars. We couldn't do like old school, like rotoscoping film passes, like they would have done, John Dykstra or someone like that would have done back in the day. We couldn't do that. But that was, we tried to limit our CG and visual effects as much as we could with that.
Any more comments, Leo?
No. Carlo was talking about realizing that the struggle is real and trying to make a movie. He's trying to make a movie himself. Also a Japanese horror movie as well. So everybody definitely has their plates full. But speaking of plates full, what do you guys have going on? What's your current project and what are you looking to do for next year?
Oh, sure. We're in post-production with High Fear. It's our third movie from our trilogy of horror anthologies. So we started with High Eight and then continue on with High Dev, which came out in June. So now we're posting our segment. Some are finished, some are in the making. We have 5 directors only on this one. The segments are longer. And the main theme, it's not like we're not going with like a format like we did, you know, the previous ones, you know, High Eight or High Def, moving into High Definition. We're just having a theme, inviting the filmmakers to explore their fears. So
when we did High Eight, we really just did it for fun. I mean, it really was for fun. Like, let's just go shoot something, like go back to your roots and shoot something. And that's how we approached it. And we wanted all the other filmmakers to approach it that way too. And they did, but we didn't think it would catch on as well as it did. We didn't think it would get the attention it got and be so well received. And so here we are making a third one, but I think it's a nice trilogy of indie horror, you know, and I've gotten to work with some directors that I was a fan of when I was starting out, like Tim Ritter, you know, and Todd Sheets. I was watching their movies, you know, when I was picking up a camera, literally, like I was watching their stuff and going, wow, how'd these guys make these things and get them out there? And now we've been working together on like 3 films and become friends and everything. So it's really, it's been a real interesting, cool process and a chance for filmmakers to just be completely creative and not have anybody leaning on them to do one thing or the other, pushing them in one direction or another. It's nothing corporate about it. It's just very like, go make something that you think is cool and we will put it all together. And that's what we're doing. So yeah, working on that right now.
I remember when High Eight came out and how much it exploded in the horror community. I mean, it was amazing. I'd not heard of this movie. One day, the next day, everyone was talking about it. And I was like, okay, well, now I have to see this movie. And next thing you know, I'm going out, I'm getting High Eight and I'm watching it.
It was awesome to see. I mean, I remember when we hadn't even made the film yet, we just made a Facebook page for it. And the next day, Yahoo Movies put up an article called "Watch Out VHS, There's a New Format in Town." And, you know, and of course that tagline ended up on the box, but it was just like, wow, people are aware of this thing that we just like haven't even done anything yet for, and I guess we better deliver. But it was really nice to see that, because you can't create that. You can't force people to like something. They either do or they don't. That's one thing I've learned over the years is you can't, you know, people either get it and they enjoy it or they don't. You can't force it down their throats. So I'm really glad people enjoyed the movie and it's caught on, and it's great because it was done from the heart. I mean, it really was. It was just completely done from the heart. Like, let's pretend like we're 18 years old again with a camera and just shooting stuff, and we don't care what happens to it. We're just having fun. And it caught on. So
I think the anthology films are coming to life. Like, before you had just like the Creep Show and stuff like that. Like, now you get like everywhere you turn, and it's kind of like anthologies. I mean, you have the VHSs, you have the ABCs of Death, you have like everywhere you turn the
Tales of Halloween,
Trick or Treat. Like everywhere you turn, it's kind of like a new anthology film.
Because, you know, the filmmakers, sometimes they have cool ideas, but they can't stretch them to features. So they can explore that on a shorter scale. Also for us, it's fun because it's more playful. You can don't take the genre seriously in terms of anthology and just kind of,
you reinvent the anthology. I think a lot of the films you mentioned, I think they've reinvented what anthologies mean nowadays. I think they mean more of like a combination platter or, you know, something where you're going to get a lot of different influences from different people, but you're not, it's not like a unified thing like the Amicus films were, or, you know, Creepshow, which I dearly love. I mean, Creepshow is one of my favorite anthology films, period, but it's not going to be like that. It's going to be nowadays, like you said, it's more like, hey, we got a little bit of this tone and style over here, and we got this type of horror over here. And it's kind of cool because you never know, what's coming next. Yeah. It could be like with High Eight, some people did more of a comedic approach. Some people did more of a deadly serious. And I love that they did that. And that's actually one of the reasons why we wanted some of those filmmakers on the movie, because we knew they would do something different from each other. We didn't have to like micromanage it so much, like, you know. So it was just, I think that's how they are now. Like you mentioned, like VHS, ABCs of Death, Height. Mm-hmm. Those are all kind of like in the new, I think they kind of reflect the new breed of anthology that we're getting. That I think it's great because it gives viewers, and there was a movie called Southbound that came out that was pretty cool.
Yeah.
Kind of gives, you know, there's all different approaches, and we're always rethinking it.
Yeah,
too.
We're trying to do fresh things, different ideas.
Every time we do one of these films,
we haven't seen before.
We're like, okay, the last one we did this type of connector story. Well, the next one gotta be different, you know. And usually things have happened in the culture anyway by then that you need to address or that you might want to consider. And you know, there's just all kinds of things. Like we're still thinking about the connector for the new one for High Fear. We haven't shot it yet because we don't want to overthink that. We want to see the other segments come in. Think more about the overall order they're going to be in and how that's going to, because you need to create an order that's going to kind of take the audience on a certain ride, and it's got to have like peaks and valleys, and it can't just be like this. So, you know, these things are very organic. They're kind of like, and when you get the segments, it's exciting from the filmmaker because maybe you've seen the script, but you don't really know what they did till you see the segment. So it's always cool to like get those and you know, and I think that's why people are responding to that, because it gives them more different types of horror, mm-hmm. you know, it's not just one thing. So yeah, I'm glad everybody's enjoying them, you know, we're having fun making them. So, you know.
Well, we are at the 10 o'clock hour, so we're going to start wrapping things up. I want to thank you both so much for joining us this evening.
Sure, thanks for having us. This has been fun. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know.
Totally. We urge everybody to definitely check out the 10th anniversary of Plaguers. Again, the information is in the show notes down below or up above, depending on where you're watching or listening to us, out on physical media and VOD. But all of us love collecting.
Check out as much of Brad stuff as you can. Not just Plaguers, but I'm going to go to bat for the Pact. I really am. I'm going to bring it up again.
Somebody has to.
Dude, I love this movie, The Pact. You know, like you said, Camp Blood 2, Within the Woods. You know, the death factory.
Yep. Death Factory. You
know, just Google his stuff and watch it all.
They don't need to Google, just check the show notes. It's all right there. Brad Brad and Josephina, where do you like people following you most?
Nightfall Pictures Facebook official page. We post regularly, weekly, all the updates from all the movies that we've been making and the one that we're gonna making.
So. Yeah, I mean, we have pages for, like, we're talking about High Eight earlier. I mean, there are pages designated for High Eight, High Death, and for High Fear. And so, you know, I would definitely encourage people to like those. If you like those movies and you like horror anthologies, we've always got news about those movies too. There's always new things to share about them. But yeah, Nightfall Pictures is the best way to get like everything, to find out about everything that we're up to over here.
Past and present and future projects.
Past, present, future.
Nice. Tony.
You can find me at Tony Has Nine Fingers on YouTube, where I'm doing movie reviews and unboxings and stuff like that. Tony Has Nine Fingers on Twitter, and then Tony's Movies on Instagram, where I show off the movies behind me. And of course, here on The Dorkening every Tuesday.
I just got to say, Tony, what did you do to your camera? This is like the clearest you've been in a while.
Shh, you're not supposed to say
it's
anything.
It's gonna shuffle up, and I'm gonna turn off just because you said that.
We're not gonna get the confetti. We haven't got the confetti cannon in a while.
Yeah,
he's gonna turn into a Minecraft.
We're gonna turn into a block.
Yeah. Yo.
You can find me at Boy Meets Phone on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, and YouTube. Also, Yo Saint Laurent on those same social media channels. And of course, you can find me here, Wolfie.
You can catch me up on YouTube, the 13th Wolfman, Twitter at the 13th Wolfman, Tumblr, 13th Wolfman, The Prowl. Every Sunday on The Dorkening and Tuesday on The Wicked Horror Show, do the Wicked Horror Reviews with Kev. And always check out my YouTube because I'm throwing something new up all the time. Leo?
Yeah. For me, just Google Leo Pond. You find a bunch of stuff. Could be true, could be not. I'm not going to say which is which, but I'm sure it is. Yeah. I don't know. Alex said he was going to like Google bomb me some really weird stuff. But more importantly, head on over to thedorkening.com. That's where you can find all the shows on the network. Tons of shows to listen to. New shows just about every day. But more importantly, head on over to the links down below or above. Check out Nightfall Pictures, right? Did I say it right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
And